This is the Higher Ed Tech Podcast, Season 2, Episode 18, Annotating Tools and the Future Format of Your Class.
Welcome to today's Higher Ed Tech Podcast. I'm Tim Van Norman, the instructional technologist here at Irvine Valley College.
And I'm Brent Warner, professor of ESL here at IVC. We both enjoy integrating technology into the classroom, which is what this show is all about.
Welcome. We're glad you're here with us. So last time I talked about the fact that I would be moving between episodes. And yes, I am now in a new location, so I don't know if this is going to help or hurt.
Yeah.
As far as the sound is concerned. But I am a 45-minute drive away from where I was before. So South Orange County now, not North Orange County.
Yeah.
Much closer to work, but, you know, a little different.
Some growing pains in the adjustments of moving, right?
Hey, if you've ever moved, you know exactly what my pains are right now, having just finished it last weekend. Yeah. So,
yes. You know, Tim, I was thinking, normally when you move, like, you can invite some friends to help you and like pay them in pizzas and things like that. But I feel like it's probably not a very comfortable time to ask friends to, like, I don't know if you did, like maybe one or two, but like you might have a party and like get a bunch of people to help.
You know, we'd love to do an open house, but how do you do an open house with nobody?
Yeah.
Yeah. So COVID, we're hoping that maybe this summer, this fall, sometime soon, we'll be able to invite friends over so they can see the new house and all those good things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, here we are. So we're talking about annotation tools today. And we're also going to be talking about switching over and kind of bringing things back when you can move back to online. So let's jump over to the first segment. All right. Annotation tools. So Tim, annotation tools are all over the place, right? There's lots of different things, and they've existed in different forms. But I think recently, it seems to me it's taken a real long time for like good annotation tools to show up online for whatever reason. And it's not, ultimately, it doesn't seem like it's that complicated of a technology, but like for years and years, it was like, you can't just do the same thing as writing a note on the edge of a piece of paper, right? Or giving quick feedback, but it is getting there pretty a lot better now than it used to be.
Yeah. And it's something that people are asking about. I literally had, I think, two or three different conversations this week about this type of topic and how do I annotate my students' papers? How do I have students annotate something so that they can demonstrate knowledge or something like that? And understand, in some ways, we also have to talk about commenting tools.
Yeah.
Because as people are talking about annotate can mean drawing as well as just simply commenting. So understand that as we're talking about this, there's a lot of nuances even to the language that we use for this.
Well, I think we have to start with, you know, the bane of my existence, but you, but, you know, it's the oldest and the most well-known, which is, you know, our good old friend Adobe, right? Adobe Acrobat,
right.
and annotating. Let's start off, let's give them their due process, because it matters and people use it, even though I was complaining to you earlier today.
Well, you know, it's on almost every computer. It's free, really easy to install, really easy to use once you understand it. But remember what I said just a minute ago, when we talk about annotation tools, we're also talking about commenting. Mm-hmm. Adobe doesn't call it annotating. They call it commenting. And so if you're thinking annotation, you're never going to find it.
Right.
If you're thinking commenting, then you'll find it and you can do stuff with it. So turning it on, trying it out, as in every tool we're going to talk about, try it before you need it. Make sure that you understand how it works, because if you have to have it right now, that's the wrong tool for you. I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
So just make sure and try it before you tell your students to make sure it does the way you want it to do what you want it to do.
Yeah. And so for me, you know, Tim, I showed it to you. I shared screen, and I don't know why it does this. Every time I open up a PDF, it gives like a load thing. It needs to load the process. And I know you said, hey, that doesn't happen to me. And so it's like, of course it doesn't
happen. Yeah, but see, I'm on Windows, so I don't know if if that's a Mac feature.
Yeah, it's a bonus. You pay extra for it, to the time to breathe freely, right? but I also do find it non-intuitive is my problem. So the way that they have it set up, I'm like, I don't think in that way. And their organizational structure for like how you choose different tools or like how you choose things, to me, I find that bothersome. And so I think it's good that we found a couple different things that we can also play with alternatives, right? So hey, if you need Adobe, if you've got it, if it's free, if you know how to use it, wonderful. But there's also some other great things that are coming out and different ways to interact with things as well. So let's start off with the first one, which is Cami. Cami is it's a PDF annotator that's built right into your Chrome browser. I mean, it's a Chrome extension, I guess, essentially. And so what it does is it lets you load whatever file you want into Google Drive or into OneDrive or whatever it is that you're using as a PDF. And then you can really quickly and easily draw directly onto that paper. So if it's a PDF, it's fine. I think it also converts everything into things, but it's right there on top of the, you know, whatever you're loading in. And so if you just want to draw a quick little comment, if you want to draw squares and boxes, there's some upgrade features, including equations, which I know we talk about for our math teachers who want some of those tools as well. I think that's an upgrade need. But leaving comments, marking up the papers, all of those types of things, it is simple. And the reason why this is so easy to work with, I think, Tim, is because it's actually designed for K-12. And if you think of the K in K-12, like they're really talking about kids, like kindergarten kids being able to use this thing and to draw on it. And so for me, that is a smart setup where it's like, hey, you know, hey dummy, you can do this type of thing, right?
And if you want to have your students drawing something, understand that they're going to be drawing with a mouse, a touchpad, unless you've got something that will allow touch screen and a pen or stylus. But this can do that very, very easily. And so you could draw molecules if you really wanted to. It's designed for commenting. So comments will show off to the right and stuff like that. But you can do even simple, very simple, but simple drawings on this to communicate, either have your students do it or for you to communicate with your students.
Yeah. And there are some upgrade features where the comments can include your voice or video right onto the PDF. So you can like just record yourself talking about certain points. I think one of the real things that people like about this is that, you know, hey, I've spent all these years as a teacher. I've got all these PDFs. I've got all these things that I've printed out over the years, right? And I just want my students to be able to interact with them in the same ways as they used to do. Now, I think we could have a whole long conversation about why we need to upgrade our actual approach to technology and what we're doing, but I totally get it. Like, hey, I've got these documents. They've worked well. My students learn. How can I just get them to interact with them on the computer screen the same way I did when I put it on their desk in front of them, right? And I think Cami is a really good option for doing things like that, where it's like, hey, here's a quadrant of four boxes. Draw your four different pictures, each of the life cycle of the plant growing or whatever it is. This is a great and easy way to do it. And so it's Cami HQ, K-A-M-I-H-Q. It's actually, I'm going to be pedantic here, Tim. It's actually Cami, because Cami comes from the Japanese word for paper, but everybody calls it Cami. so it's Cami HQ. It is pretty cool. And then there's the free version, of course, and the upgrade version, and the upgrade version, of course, is better as you go.
But always.
I think
you hope.
Yes. But the, I will say that the free version covers quite a lot of what you would basically need. Like if you're just saying, hey, basic interactions, getting the simple parts covered for me, it'll probably get you there with what you need. And then I think the teacher plan, it's $100. It's $99 a year. adds on top of a lot of extra features with it, including things like you can use like dictionaries and text to speech and speech to text, and you know, it can integrate into Canvas, I think, with that higher level version. So anyways, get started with the free version, play with it, see if it works for your basic needs. And then if you're looking for more, well, Tim, maybe we can see about the school or district version if that's something that people really want. But yeah, so Cameron.
Right. The next one we wanted to talk about is Hypothesis. I heard about a year or so ago, somebody brought it up, asked about it. This allows you to annotate websites. So the last one we talked about, Cami, was really good about documents themselves, specifically PDF documents. This allows you to create annotations on a newspaper website or something like that so that you can interact with your students at a different level about that particular site.
Yeah.
So you can explain something maybe that you want them to read this site, read these, this page, but maybe they aren't going to understand a phrase. So you can put a comment off to the side. You can draw it. You can put a picture in. There's a lot of different things that you can do with this so that it can enhance your students' ability to understand that site.
Yeah. And Tim, I want to kind of clarify this because it's a little hard to get your head around it first. So like, how do you just go in and annotate a website, right? The structure, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong or if you remember if I'm wrong here, but I think the structure is basically you kind of log into Hypothesis in a sense, right. And then you're like, hey, I'm in Tim's class, and then it's like, hey, here are the different ones, and you as a student could add a website and say like, let me go annotate this website, but then it connects back to kind of the class as the base level, right? So so it's tracking who you're interacting with as like your teachers and students and classmates, but also it links into whatever sites you've been working with together, right?
And it basically puts an overlay on the site.
Right.
And so you're looking at the overlay, the site underneath it, and then the overlay, the thing that's over it at the same time. So it doesn't give the person, it's not changing the website itself.
Right.
It is only, it's giving that overlay so that you see the website through this other lens, through Hypothesis, which is really nice because it also allows you to work in groups. And so a group can annotate a website or something like that all together and work together on this particular project rather than it only being one person and everybody sees what this one person says.
Yeah, absolutely. So Hypothesis is a good one. And I know we have one or two teachers that work with it quite a bit. And so I think maybe we can dig deeper in the future and kind of bring them on the show to share some of their thoughts and experiences with it as well.
It'd be nice. Yes.
Yeah. So the last one is, so we talked about annotating on PDFs. We talked about kind of annotating the web. And now the last one is annotating your screen on your computer. So I found this today, actually, Tim. It's called Demo Pro. And there's a few different things out there that maybe do similar things. But this one is really simple and clean. Basically, it's an annotator on your monitor, right? And so it just draws over whatever else you've got going on. So you can have three different applications open and you can draw over all three of them at the same time. It's a really simple tool. It's just a click and hey, you've got the pen drawing, whatever it is that you're going to draw. You got your arrow or your circles or whatever it is you're going to do, but that's about it. And so for me, if with my class, maybe I've got my second monitor set up, right? And I'm screen sharing my second monitor, but I've got like my Canvas shell on half of the page, and I've got, you know, the Kindle book that we're reading on the other half of the page, and then I can draw lines back and forth, or I can say like highlight this word and then remember to go and do it in this activity over here. And so I really am quite happy. It's called Demo Pro. It's very simple. There are a few other things that do similar things. I did not find a PC version for this. I don't know if you did, Tim.
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say. When I looked it up, it verified what you had told me before, it is only for Mac.
Sorry.
And it does not appear to even work for iPad, which is interesting. Hopefully they'll have some enhancements soon. But it really, as you were demonstrating it to me before, it's a really neat way of quickly annotating something on your screen, drawing attention to a specific spot, and then wiping it out and moving on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So it can continue with that. It's really nice that way.
So if you're on a Mac Demo Pro, and it's $2, that's a great price. Like I actually prefer that to free in certain ways, because I'm like, hey, I'm throwing the maker a couple bucks. Like they realize there's some value to it, but it's also a really light tool. And so, you know, $2, easy, and happy to have it. All right, zippy tip. So Tim, we're talking about group tabs in Chrome. This is a fairly new feature. Basically, all you do is inside, if you got a bunch of tabs, I am a tab monster, as Tim can see, as I've got my screen shared up here. And some people get super stressed out when they look at my computer screen, which I understand. But I've got like 100 tabs open, right? And so what you can do is you can go to any tab that you like, and you can right click on it now. And then you can add, you can click on a little drop down menu that says add tab to new group. And you can make a whole group of whatever it is that you're looking for. So for example, maybe you want a set of tabs based on the class that you're going to be teaching later today, right? And so you just build all your tabs and you load them all into a group tab that would be, for example, in my class, ESL 80, right? And then I have quick access to it. They're all grouped together as one, and I can kind of slow down the load of having a bunch of different tabs that are all pulling processing power depending on how it's set up. So,
group tabs. And you can also pull that out of the browser and use it outside of the browser. You know, in a separate browser just for that group.
Yeah, new window too.
Yep. All as one time. So it's a really nice feature that way.
Awesome. So group tabs in Chrome. All right. So Tim, we've been talking a little bit. I mentioned to you that I was in a conversation recently with some other higher ed teachers, and we were having this conversation of like, you know, what are you going to be bringing back with you? Now you've been teaching online, you've been doing all these things. And so we started saying, well, let's talk about that, right? We've taught online for a year, and now the real conversation is, hey, school's starting to open up again, right? You're starting to see teachers showing up and like maybe peeking their heads around the corners of buildings and like, is it cool for me to be here and all those things. But the reality is we're looking at teachers coming back for sure in fall at some level, and probably much heavier in the spring. I know anyone who's listening to us from K-12, they're like, oh, whatever, we've already been going back for a while. But this is us and this is our reality right now. So we're looking at going back. And I think it's a great conversation to kind of understand, like, well, you've learned a bunch of stuff, right? You have hopefully new ideas. Hopefully. you've found things that work and you found things that didn't work, right? And so so we want to talk about the future format of your class. And this is just kind of more a theoretical conversation, not necessarily specific tools and everything, but maybe some tools, but we'll see. So Tim, what are you thinking about here?
Well, so understand also, we're not saying your class is going to look like. In fact, we're saying the opposite. What is your class going to look like? Mm-hmm. You, Brent, you taught online. I'm sorry, you taught online for the last year. But prior to that, you used tools that were online, but you taught your face-to-face class.
Correct.
Now, as you're considering what the future holds for you and your teaching, you've learned some things, as you just said. What are you going to integrate? So think about a couple of things. How do you determine what you're going to use? If you're going to be on campus, are you going to use a camera? Why would you use a camera? Well, are you going to do recordings? Are you not going to do recordings? Are you going to allow your students who might not be able to make it for whatever reason, the ability to interface with you in the classroom, mm-hmm. physically in the classroom?
Yeah,
I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no. All I'm saying is this now, a year ago, if we had this discussion, or a year and a half ago, if we had this discussion, Well, no, how would you do that? Why would you even think about something like that? Now it's a real discussion that you get to think about as a teacher, and as that instructor get to feel it out and see what your students are interested in, but also see what you're good at.
Yeah.
If you're not any good at recording and posting recordings and stuff like that, maybe that's not a tool for you to use.
I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation, Tim, because students' expectations are going to change quite a bit, right? And so we've been recording classes now for the last, you know, year and a half, whatever it is, right? And students are starting to get used to it. And they're like, wait, where's my recording? Why can't I go back and look at this? Which is actually interesting, too, because I don't know, like, I was having this conversation with someone recently, which is, you know, you have a recording of something. If you go to it live, you go to it live. And like, I almost never go back and watch the recording of it afterwards. Right. Almost never. Like in the,
almost never.
Yeah. In the low single digit percentile, right? Mm-hmm. Of times that I might actually go and do that. But the feedback that I get from students seems to indicate that they are doing this more often. Maybe not a ton, but maybe in the high single percentage, you know, right. But even still, that could be two times or four times as much if you're, you know, like as was going on in the past. Right. And so I am really interested to see what students are going to be expecting. And if we have classes on campus, they're going to say, well, are you recording this class so that I can go and watch it later? Right. You know, I was listening to you, but I wasn't totally taking notes. I think, you know, like I was, you know, whatever else is going on, or I was distracted and I want to hear what you had to say again. I want to focus more on that type of thing, right? And that is a technological possibility now, right? And right. Becoming more recognized by students and what they will get from some professors, and then it will become an impetus on the professors who don't want to do that to provide that in some other way, right? Because I just see this starting to become the trend and expectation. And then it's like, well, why aren't you doing this? You know, maybe not tomorrow, but maybe 2 years down the line or 3 years down the line or 5 years down the line.
Well, and think about it from the perspective of note taking. While you're taking notes, you're trying to pay attention, but you always miss something.
Yeah.
Now you can go back through, watch the video and pick up what you missed. And if you really care about your class, this is a really nice study tool. If you don't care about your class, you're not going to go back and it's not going to matter anyway. But if for a student who cares, who's really trying to get that good grade, who's really paying attention, they now have the ability to go back. Now you as the instructor have the ability to say, last week I talked about this. If you want to see it, go back to the recording. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to go back through everything that you covered in that last week. So recording can be very useful. It, like I said before, it might not be you, but that's something to think about. There's also a lot of other tools that could be useful. In your classroom, you could actually use Zoom. Mm-hmm. So you could, if you've got a large classroom, you could have students with laptops able to now see your screen better than if they, than just looking at the screen that you're projecting, because they can use Zoom on their laptop. You could have it automatically transcribe, so they could actually see the text of what you're saying and maybe save that for note-taking. Inside the classroom, I'm not talking about, you know, somebody who's not in the classroom, somebody inside the classroom, this could be useful for them. You've got Canvas. How is Canvas going to look for you? How are you going to accept student submissions for assignments? That can be huge. If you're used to getting paper all the time and now you've spent a year receiving everything online.
Yeah. Oh, this is a major
What's change. Easier for you? You know, this can be different for different people.
This is such
What's
a major,
easier for you?
Absolutely. Like to me, you know, I've been using online submissions for quite a long time now, but mm-hmm. like I would still see teachers walking around with their giant tote luggage and, you know, 20 books inside of their pull along with papers sprawling and a gust of wind goes and it blows it all over the quad, you know, like kind of the stereotypical joke image of the disheveled professor, but it's like a very real thing. Right. And so I'm interested, like, are people going to go back to that? They're like, oh, I can't wait to get my hands on that Xerox machine and really, you know, smell that ozone and print out 1,000 copies of this document. Or are we going to say, well, hey, hold on a second. I can just walk with my cell phone and I can log in with my fingerprint and we all have access to everything here in the classroom, right? To me, that's an obvious one choice, but I totally get that some people are like, no, I want that paper. I want that physical connection with goods and those types of things too. And so I am really, really interested to see. My suspicion is that people will move a lot more towards online submissions because students are going to want that too, right? They're going to say, mm-hmm. Hey, I did all this work. Why do I have to go pay $3 to go print this thing out in the library and then bring it back to you to give it to you on paper, right? Like, that doesn't make sense to students possibly in the future. And I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying, like, I'm we're talking about that long game. What are the changes that students now are going to start recognizing they're capable of? And then that will become the expectation for teachers as well. And Tim, you touched on this briefly, but I also want to go back to Canvas, right? The Canvas structure for everything. You had a lot of teachers on campus that just never really used Canvas before we went online, right?
Like, we had a few.
There were people out there.
About 25% of our classes were not published in Canvas before.
That's quite a few. 25% is a big chunk, right? Like, to me.
It is, but it's also, it's a strong 75% being published is a strong percentage too. So, I don't want to minimize or either way. That, but there's significant number of people who didn't use Canvas and now your students are in many cases coming to me as a support person asking, where's my grade? Mm-hmm. I don't see my grade in Canvas.
Right.
Or, but my teacher, I need to hand this in at 11 o'clock at night, or something like that. All of those things, Canvas allows us some of that freedom.
Right.
And structure of Canvas, how do you give the students that kind of resource and then copy it to the next semester unless you're giving it in an electronic format like that?
Yeah. Well, and also because of Canvas, and I know I'm saying things that are fairly obvious, maybe to many of our listeners, but like, okay, we're going to structure our classes. We're going to do weekly modules or we're going to do unit modules or whatever it is. Right. There are also teachers out there who up until the last year have done like, hey, I'm going to be printing all of this stuff out and you're going to put it in your binder and you're going to carry it around with you. Right. And so that is a totally different thing. And you don't have to do one thing or the other. This is just the challenge to think about. Like, when you go back, one, am I doing what I like because I like those things or because it serves the best purpose, right? There are going to be times where paper assignments are going to serve the best purpose for your class. Absolutely. And there are going to be times when a digital assignment that a student can turn in at, I don't like the midnight turn-ins because I don't imagine many teachers are actually grading at midnight. But for me, let's say, hey, you can turn it in at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, right? And that's when I'm going to start grading. I like that because I'm not going to be on campus. And that gives my students an extra 2 days to do their work and prepare themselves and do all of those things, right? So we can look at these different options and really kind of take the best of everything that we had before and move it forward with it in order to best serve our students, as we come back onto campus or do some sort of hybrid version of those things.
And in that, I love what you just said. Take the best of what you've got. You've now had an opportunity to learn something new. Take what you've learned and what is best for you. Okay. Not what's best for Brent, not what's best for Tim, what's best for you. Mm-hmm. And put that together in a way that's going to serve the students and serve you.
Yeah. And with that in mind, I think we had a last idea here, which is check what your students actually want, right? Like run a survey with your students. Throw up a Google form or a Microsoft Forms, right, in your class now, this week, right, or next week, and throw it up and say, you know, some questions that are going to serve you well for when you make whatever shift you're going to make or non-shift you're going to make in the future, right? Do you like the online classes? Do you like them in person, right? A teacher individually can even start getting the sense of their students, because then they can make their decisions on what they're going to request to in the future, even from their departments or whatever it is, right? But also, hey, what kind of assignments did you like? Did you like working with Google Course Kit assignments, right? Yes, no, a little bit. You can range them, right? What time was the most convenient for you to turn in assignments, right? All of these types of questions, I think, could be things that you could track down a little bit and just see, because it's based on the way that you run your class, but you can get a little bit of guidance on where you might want to lean it, and where what ideas you might want to step into more and what you might want to step away from a bit. So lots of things to consider. We'll keep talking about these things. I think we're not done with the transition back to class. We're still online for now, but lots and lots to think about. So keep that in mind as we're moving into the summer.
Thank you for listening today. In this episode, we talked about annotating tools and the future format of your class. For more information about this show, please visit our website at thehigheredtechpodcast.com. There you will find our podcast and links to the information we've covered.
As always, we want your feedback, so please go to thehigheredtechpodcast.com and let us know your thoughts. If you have ideas for future shows, there's a link on that page where you can give us your topic ideas.
For everyone at IVC that's listening, if you need help with technology questions, please contact IVC Technical Support at 949-451-5696 or by emailing ivctech@ivc.edu. If you have questions about technology in your classroom, please contact me, Tim Van Norman, at tvannorman@ivc.edu.
And if you want to reach out to me about the show, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Brent G. Warner.
I'm Tim Van Norman.
And I'm Brent Warner, and we hope this episode has helped you on the road from possibility to actuality. Have a good one, everybody.